This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A seriously injured whale makes its way to the Puget Sound. President Obama says the clock is ticking on the Bush-era tax cuts. And one team beat another team in some sporting or other thing over the weekend.
Well done. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm the award-nominated Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, December 6th, 2010. A seriously injured whale, apparently hurt in a collision with at least one boat, has been seen swimming in Puget Sound for over the past week. Cascadia Research, which has posted photos online, says the sightings go back at least a week and possibly as early as November 13th.
Cascadia Research, you say?
Cascadia Research.
All right.
Not affiliated with Cascadia.fm.
That
we know of.
Don't tell anybody. People will just assume that we are more further reaching than we really are.
People only know
what you tell them. Don, you fool, you've ruined it all.
Our research arm, Cascadia Research.
Nah, whatever.
No one would believe that.
Too late. You've ruined it.
The photos were taken December 1st in Totten Inlet. Researchers are trying to determine what species the whale is. Researchers say this whale was not surfacing normally due partly to injuries that appear to have been caused by a collision with a boat, maybe two. One of the injuries is clearly from a spinning propeller. Another serious deep injury appears to extend from the top of the back and down to the spinal processes. It appears to extend some 40 feet. Anyone who sees the whale is asked to call Cascadia Research because... Does that mean they've lost it? They don't know where it is? I guess Puget Sound is big, so if the whale...
You know, here's the thing about whales, is they appear to have some sort of a... I mean, I don't know that this is the actual scientific term for it. I may be incorrect on this front. But whales, they have some sort of Romulan cloaking ability, apparently. Because they're like the biggest things on Earth, and yet sometimes, because scientists track particular whales, or it's like, they're not really able to tag them always, but they can sort of identify them by particular markings. And they'll just go decades, sometimes, and not be able to figure out where the freaking thing is. And this is a creature that is the size, it has a heart the size of a school bus. Oh, and also, it's got to come to the surface to breathe. But we just lose them for years on end. So they're crafty, is what they are.
Well, sadly, honestly, when they say that the whale is seriously injured by whatever this propeller was, they're not kidding. Here, take a look.
I'm not going to take a look at it, but thanks. Look. No, I'm really not.
It's like missing a big hunk of meat off the top of it right there.
How nice for you. Thank you.
You just won't look, will you?
No, I'm not.
All right.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, December 6th, 2010. Coming up later on this hour, you get your Science on the March as well as your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget, if you want to download this program via iTunes, you can do that, of course, at iTunes later on in the day. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download right here at legionofnews.com at Cascadia.fm and on your mobile device that is mobile mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Look, whale. Okay, you're not going to...
Seriously, you're not amusing it anyway.
Oh, all right.
Move on.
President Obama says the clock is ticking when it comes to extending the Bush-era tax cuts. During a speech in North Carolina, the president urged Congress to reach a compromise.
This is President Obama 1.
Yes.
We've got to make sure that we're coming up with a solution, even if it's not 100% of what I want or what the Republicans want.
I don't really know that that's a solution. I think that's just doing some stuff.
Yeah. Obama says both parties in Congress need to be willing to give and take on the issue.
There's no reason that ordinary Americans should see their taxes go up next year. We should also extend unemployment insurance for workers who've lost their jobs through no fault of their own. That is a priority.
Wait, hold on a second. Let me just, hold on. Let me do a joke for the common man here. Can you just do that setup one more time?
Obama says that both parties in Congress need to be willing to give and take on the issue.
Yeah, but you know what that means, Don. They usually give it, and we just have to bend over and take it. Humor.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, a fine news repository and whale researching facility. Extraordinaire. Here is Don Taylor.
Obama, by the way, says that the last thing the nation can afford is to let the cuts expire at the end of the year.
We've got to find consensus here. Because a middle-class tax hike would be very tough, not only on working families, it would also be a drag on our economy.
It'd be a drag.
It'd be a drag.
Harsh marshmallow. It would suck. You don't even know how much it would suck. I mean, all the sucking, you can't even imagine. Rule my whole afternoon. You are listening to Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program. Grace is the virtual airwaves next hour at rickemerson.com. Our special guest today, Mr. Ryan White, returning from paternity leave. Oregonian music editor Ryan White. We'll also do the top five songs about a departing or departed band member. It's the top five songs about a departing or departed band member. Mr. Aaron Duran at the Weekend Geek, Taser Watch, and your clown watch, because apparently is it the day of the clown today, or was it the day of the clown, like, earlier?
I'm not entirely sure. I believe it already happened. Dia de los payasos, day of the clowns. Yeah, it already happened.
There really needs to be. Please tell me there's photographic evidence of this.
Oh, well, I'm sure there is. This story is from the Los Angeles Times, and it was on Alvera Street in L.A., so I'm sure there are many, many photos of clowns.
I just hope with all my heart that somebody, I mean, God forbid, that someone just send you some video of the day of the clowns happening. You know, but labeled like, I don't know, labeled like in a rare Bowie bootleg footage, you know, 1976 or something.
Are you hoping this because I tried to get you to look at the whale picture?
No, it's just because I like the idea of unnerving you in general.
Oh, all right.
You know, it has nothing to do with, it's not tied to any particular day. By the way, here's how you know, and you owe me one and you don't even realize it. This is the thing. You don't even know how in my debt you are today. I won't say how this was going to happen. I will say that it has nothing to do with Greg or Sarah. But I will say that, you know, have you ever gone to a gun range? You're a gun target shooting?
Yeah.
You go to a target, and, you know, sometimes you get the round target, and sometimes you got the sort of the generic, like, human outline, but not really, where it's just, you know, it's like some shoulders, and then it's like one of those, like, wooden things you eat a Dixie cup with, but it's a little broader one, you know, and then they've got to, but then a couple years ago, they started to do, like, this sort of edgy, you know, where it's like the guy with the gun.
Oh.
You know, and I get the feeling that's for when cops go through and it's like you got to figure out, like, is it a guy with a gun or a girl with an ice cream cone? And you have to be able to fire correctly. So they started to make targets that looked a little, you know, they were more human or humanoid looking. Then things just got completely and totally out of control. Now there is available for purchase and one can order and then own, possess, and theoretically use and display for whatever purposes gun targets that are of evil clowns. And it was suggested that if one of those targets was put right there, like to the left of that lamp, and then if you were the first one to the studio in the morning, you would open it, and then a shaft of light from the hallway would bleed into the room, and all that would be visible in this darkened sort of sarcophagus of a room in which we broadcast would just be the image of an evil clown sort of lunging at you.
I want to know whose idea that was.
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, I will find out.
No, that's for the whale. This is for the whale and for Johnny. You're listening to Legion of News. Here's the easily frightened Don Taylor.
As the third quarter turned to the fourth and AC/DC blared in Reser Stadium, Oregon State's sideline was rocking, its players thinking they might just pull off a monster upset. On its side, top-ranked Oregon stayed cool, focused on winning the day.
Did they play the game they needed to play and do the work they needed to do?
They gave 110%.
The other team, they didn't come to dance, kids.
No. It's a game of inches.
That's right.
I've heard. When it was done and a spot in the BCS national title game was secured, that's when the Ducks finally let loose. Heisman Trophy contender LaMichael James, Kenjin Barner, and the fast-paced Ducks negotiated a last speed bump on the way to Glendale, Arizona, grinding out a 37-20 victory over the Beavers in the Civil War on Saturday.
Let me just say, here's a thing that does not just instantly connote class. It's putting Le in front of a name that doesn't need. What's his name? LaDavid?
LaMichael.
I'm sorry. LaMichael.
LaMichael.
All right. It's like in Utah where you, and I would imagine there's some sort of Chinese variation on this as well, where you meet people who clearly wanted a boy, but God punished them with a girl. They were just given a fistful of X chromosomes where they desperately wanted a Y. And so you'll meet girls named like LaDon. And I did in fact meet a girl at one point named LaDave. LaDave. And you'll meet a lot of Davidias too, and Robertas, and Pauline and Paulina. And it's obviously where it's like they were rooting for the penis, but they were thwarted by God.
That's one of the reasons I'm named Dawn, by the way.
Really?
Yes. My parents were convinced they were going to have a boy, and they had a boy's name all picked out. If I had been a boy, my name would have been Kent. Kent.
No, wait a minute. That doesn't work at all. What do you mean that's why you're named Dawn?
Because I turned out to be a girl, and they hadn't come to a consensus on a female name. So, and it was like my mother wanted to name me Rebecca, and my father, for some reason, I don't know if
you'd be a good Rebecca.
A just cruel person, but my father wanted to name me Cricket, and my mother would have none of that. And so I ended up settling on calling me Dawn, which is a female version of my father's name, which is Don.
No. Rebecca's a good name. You would have made a good Rebecca.
I think so.
You could be that. What's your middle name?
Alta.
Alta, A-L-T-A? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you've told me that before. Where did that come from?
That was a great aunt's name.
Okay. No, I could see that. I mean, it's, you know, Dawn works. I mean, I have no issue with Dawn. Yeah. I could see Rebecca. I could see Roberta, frankly, which is not as manly a name as sometimes it's sort of depicted as being. I think Roberta's a fine name.
No, I've never thought that Dawn really suited me, because it's a very, it's got this almost like kind of Bambi sort of, you know.
Not like Cricket, though.
A sorority girl kind of a sound to
no,
it.
No, but Cricket is just, that would have been all
that
kinds
would have
of
been
bad.
Horrible.
You would have, see, the thing, you wouldn't have stuck with that, though. You would have changed that.
Like, I wasn't unpopular enough in elementary school as it was.
Yeah.
As it was, I had to put up with Dawn the Leprechaun, went to school with nothing on, which makes no sense at all, because that rhyme is originally supposed to be about someone named Sean.
I was going to ask who came up with that, if that was a schoolyard original, or is that, I've never even heard that. No. I've never heard a variation on that.
I believe that's supposed to be for someone named Sean, who would, of course, be Irish, so the leprechaun reference. But in my case, it was just, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, my...
We got way off of the whole Civil War thing, didn't we?
Yeah, if I was a girl... This, by the way, tells you everything you need to know about my family. If I was a girl, they were going to name me Norma Jean.
Oh, I, you know,
yeah.
I'm getting a little Maryland vibe from you now.
Yeah,
I can see this.
Uh-huh. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
A vacant restaurant was declared a total loss after the ninth suspicious fire in Albany, Oregon, since October 22nd, all but one of them vacant buildings. The string has alarmed Albany city officials, who will hold a rolling press conference Monday. What does that mean, by the way?
I think it's where they're just, you know, on a float, and then there's a guy, there's a guy waving a thing, and somebody, there's a guy in a bee suit who throws candy.
Or it's like a parade. They're in, like, a convertible, and you have to run up to the car really fast and run alongside the car.
If you want to be heard.
Yeah.
That's the way to make your voice. Maybe it's like a bloodmobile.
Anyways, five vacant properties are sealed shut as part of a public awareness campaign. Fire officials believe the blazes may be related. The latest was the former China Buffet restaurant. According to this, that's all one word, by the way.
And this is where?
Buffet restaurant. Albany, Oregon.
Okay.
The arriving firefighters chose a defensive attack, meaning no crews entered the building. The restaurant was insured for $500,000 and declared a total loss.
Have you ever seen that restaurant on 82nd, that Super King Buffet?
Yeah.
What is up with that place?
I don't know. I ate there once when I was in culinary school.
Is it huge inside? It looks massive.
And the food is just appallingly awful.
Excellent. It looks like some sort of a buffet cathedral, you know? Like, it looks like it's some sort of a shrine to overeating.
Yeah, most of your Chinese food restaurants, if they do buffet food, it's just a huge, massive, just ptomaine poisoning waiting to happen. It's a bad situation. It's
Is it the beef? Is it the buffet where there's the guy like in the there's the guy in the white conical, you know, the cylindrical hat who offers you like ham or turkey?
Oh no, no, it's just a bunch of.
Or is it like a Mongolian sort of a thing?
It's just a steam table with a bunch of food that's been sitting out for you have no idea how long, and you go and you help yourself to it, and it's almost everything is some kind of sugary syrup.
Of course. Excellent. Would you like? And there's just like, and there's like a machine that just dispenses MSG.
Yeah, it's
just a huge MSG shaker on the table.
Oh, and the entire restaurant just smells like sugar and sweat.
By the way, somebody says that Super King Buffet used to be. This is why I love Portland, because it's that thing about like knowing a place by not what it is, but by what it used to be. Super King Buffet used to be Organ Grinder, a name I have always found really unnerving. By the way, the Organ Grinder, a family pizza place with a huge arcade. It's a former landmark from a different time. So is that like a Showcase Pizza / Chuck E. Cheese sort of a thing?
Something that was before my time. I remember moving here and driving past it and wondering why there was this place with this giant pipe organ in the front window. Yep. And then I heard it was like a pizza place, but I never went there.
So it might have been like a Showtime Pizza / Ferrell's kind of a
thing.
Yeah,
I think so.
All right.
WikiLeaks has published a secret diplomatic cable listing a number of sites overseas considered vital to U.S. national security. Attorney General Eric Holder says that only harm can come from this.
The American people themselves have been put at risk by these actions that are, I believe, arrogant, misguided, and ultimately not helpful in any way.
Here's the thing about the, what's his name, Julian, is it Assange or Assange?
Assange.
Assange. He just seems like a colossal prick. But I love him at the same time. That's the thing. Like, he just seems like a huge raging dick. But that is the thing where mentally I can play both sides of that fence. He seems like I guess is now, ironically, it's now justified, but he seems like a guy who is just, all about, like whatever he can do to position himself, Julian Assange, as being, some sort of a supervillain / superhero / greatest man who's ever lived. I mean, yeah. It seems to be less about releasing documents and more about like, hey, look what a badass I am, which I can sort of get behind. I'm just saying, he seems a little drama queen-y about the whole thing. Now, of course, that was really, now that, you would imagine several governments are apparently, I would imagine at this point trying to cut him into little tiny Julian pieces, maybe that's warranted. But he does seem just like kind of a douche, but I'm sort of rooting for him regardless.
I actually have no idea how I feel about this, because on the one hand, I mean, I know some people who feel very strongly about this whole all information should be free kind of a thing. And, and I've read Cory Doctorow's books and, I get it. But at the same time, there are some things that maybe, it's better. I think most people as individuals, there are some things that are best left unsaid. There are things that you're best keep to yourself.
Well,
and I think with national security, that may be true as well. But again, though, I don't know enough about all of this to feel like I have an educated opinion one way or the other.
Well, I feel that some information should be free. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up next hour at rickemerson.com. You can listen for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is one quarter, one nickel, two pennies. It's a small price to pay for really what must be considered really not only the greatest program, but the greatest thing of any kind that is that has ever existed. You can hear that at rickemerson.com. Today, Taser Watch, Clown Watch, top five songs about a departing or departed band member. By the way, there's a no Sid Barrett rule in effect, just so you know, because
okay.
Then we would just all be Dark Side of the Moon and whatever. Let's see, Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Durant and Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, rejoining us after a few weeks off to take care of his child. So that is coming up next hour at rickemerson.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, speaking of WikiLeaks, the number of sites overseas that are considered vital to U.S. security, this list comes from in 2009, when the State Department asked U.S. missions to update a list of overseas resources and infrastructures whose loss could critically impact American safety and well-being. So the list has now gone public. While the directory includes many transportation, communication, and resource hubs, it also takes a very wide view of what's considered a vital structure for national security, including an insulin plant in Denmark, a cobalt mine in the Congo, and an anti-snake venom factory in Australia. Also, a Canadian hydroelectric plant and the Siemens factory in Germany.
Well, you got to figure that, I don't know who this guy is. Like, I don't know what his background is or what he did before he was like Mr. WikiLeaks or whatever. But you got to figure that if he's got access to it and he's just some guy, I assume that the Chinese government has it because they have everything, because they're brilliant and evil. So it doesn't, I'm not really, I don't know. I guess I'm not really in a position to say, but it doesn't. I don't really buy this idea that somehow it was stuff that was really like under lock and key before and that nobody had access to.
Well, did you hear about the whole guy with his Lady Gaga thumb drive, which is how a lot of this stuff ended up getting out?
I heard something about that.
Yeah, he was just going into work and he had like a little thumb drive and he's like, I've got my music on this, like that, and he'd sing along to Lady Gaga while he was downloading all this stuff onto his thumb drive and then just carrying it back out in his pocket at the end of the day.
That's awesome.
And so you kind of go, well, see, it's not really the fault of Julian Assange so much as perhaps maybe the security was a little lax.
Like maybe they were busy filling up eight gigs of porn, you know, in the other room or something, and trying to find additional storage space for their for their dwarf sex video collection.
So Attorney General Eric Holder says he blasted the latest release during a news conference today.
This is two.
Two.
All right.
The American people themselves have been put at risk by these actions that are, I believe, arrogant.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the first.
National security of the United States has been put at risk. The lives of people who work for the American people has been put at risk. The American people themselves have been put at risk.
There's a lot of...
He keeps saying the same thing.
I was just going to say, I can't tell if there's any... I think there's like one moving part in that entire, and that there's really a finite number of components in there. Again, when he says like the American, and I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just saying I don't understand how it would be true. I'm not saying it isn't true. But when he says the like people who work for the American, unless it's just like revealing the name of, I don't know, some like undercover double agent midnight fantasy guy who's working somewhere for some other country. I mean, I guess I could see that. But otherwise, it's like you got to figure that, we have factories scattered all around the world that are making stuff. Other countries do as well. And you know that because you can't keep anything a secret,
right?
In 2010. So, again, it's not like this is
a menu that they're now presenting to terrorists who didn't know these things existed before.
So the most fascinating thing to me is the stuff like with the guy putting the thumb drive in his pocket. Because that really is like exhaust port on the Death Star type business where you're just, they've got huge, massive sort of infrastructural securities in place, but they just don't count on a guy just sort of like sticking it on a floppy and putting it in his boot or whatever. So,
well, Holder says he authorized a number of steps last week in response to the latest WikiLeaks releases, but wouldn't go into specifics.
We will do everything that we can, both to hold people accountable and to minimize the harm that will befall the American people.
See, again, and I guess I don't understand why it's so difficult to do this. For example, let me just, I won't name the organization because, I guess it doesn't really matter. But I will say that we have a lot of people who work in the healthcare industry who listen to us. And I have heard from a lot of listeners who go to, not so much Legion of News, but with the Rick Emerson show, they go to listen to it at work and the site is actually blocked. They try to go to rickemerson.com, just a big red hand comes up and it just says, and do you know why we're blocked? Because it gives you the reason sometimes. Like Greg and Sarah are blocked, like I would imagine, almost everywhere. Yeah, because of profanity and crude sexual content. We are blocked because of gruesome content.
Oh.
So that's the...
good for us.
Yeah, so that's the flag that we get. But yeah, but it's, but somebody tries to access the site. Guess what? Big thing comes up, says, no, you can't go here. F off. And yet somehow they're just like powerless to keep people from going to the WikiLeaks site, which I don't get. I mean, I don't... You know what I mean?
Yeah. What kind of...
It's like if your dad can put in a thing to stop you from surfing porn, how difficult can it be for the government to say, like, no, you can't. I want to look at the site. Well, you can't. Well, but I want to. Well, you can't. I mean, problem solved.
No, I don't think you're wrong, but
somewhere.
I don't know.
All right. Marlon and Eva.
And who are these people that think we're gruesome, by the way?
I'm sorry?
Somebody actually had to listen to our show and then decide that we were gruesome.
Well, probably like that chick who was the porn czar in Utah that just sat in a room full of smut all day and just sort of waded hip deep into it trying to figure out exactly what, like how much necrophilia was over the line, was too much. That's a good question, actually. I could investigate.
I'd like to find out.
I'll tell you what, I will email...
I mean, come on, you wouldn't even look at the whale picture. How gruesome are we?
I will email one of the people who got flagged for... Not that she got in trouble, but I mean, she tried to listen to the show and it just said, like, you can't because gruesome content, go somewhere else. And I will ask her if she can either ask or if she can put me in touch with the IT folks there. and ask, you know, not even to challenge it, but just say, like, well, who listens to it and who makes that? Like, is it a keyword search? Is it something like a voice recognition search where it samples the audio and it says, like, they hear certain words, terrorist, and they
just heard the word corpse one time too many?
And they just say, like, well, no, you're not going to listen to that, or whatever. So I'll see if I can find out. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The program is brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. What is the Day of the Clown, Don?
Dia de los Payasos, I believe it's Payasos.
See, I'm just saying, now your delivery there would be smoother and more assured.
It would.
If you had a mastery of the Spanish language and if you were able to speak it in a conversational way, you can learn to do that by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That's the URL, PortlandSpanish.com, just like it sounds, all one word. And that is Castalia Language Center, operated by Clara Grebel. And she is a native Spanish speaker who now teaches Spanish language classes for adults. So while your kids are going to school, they're going to, from the grade school all the way up through high school. They're getting Spanish taught earlier and earlier and in a more immersive fashion, which means that they're... And here's the thing. You don't want your kids to be smarter than you at something, because then that's just going to be a lot of shame. Then it's going to be, like when my uncles came back from the war and they would just sit at the dinner table and they would have conversations like in Italian or something, just to sort of flummox my grandmother. You don't want to be like that, where your kids are just pulling one over on you because they're speaking in Spanish, and, you know, who knows what they could be talking. They could be talking about going and getting zip guns or goofballs or something. So if you, speak Spanish, maybe you don't even tell them, you know? Maybe it's like listening in on a secret communique, and you don't let the enemy know you've broken the codes until there's something really, like, in the works, you know, some sort of wet work you have to stop or something. It may not be like that, but it doesn't. The point is, you can learn Spanish for any number of situations and uses. You find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is the website for Castalia Language Center, a proud sponsor of Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your science on the march for Monday, December 6th, 2010, right here at Legion of News. News, news.
Beaches were almost deserted at Egypt's popular Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh on Monday after a shark ripped apart a German woman as horrified holidaymakers looked on just days after three other women swimmers were also mauled. Only a smattering of sunbathers along the beach in front of the luxury hotel suspiciously eyed the blue waters where Sunday's frenzied attack took place a mere stone's throw from the shore.
I hate to be Johnny Pedantic. If the waters are blue, why is it the Red Sea?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I know there's the shark. I'm not... That's a pond that I'm not going to... That's too... Even for me, that's too low.
Oksana Tarenko, a Russian holidaymaker in her 20s, told the Associated Foreign Press that she had been sunbathing on the afternoon of the attack when she heard screams. She ran to a small promontory overlooking the stretch of beach reserved for hotel guests who pay a premium to avoid the crowds. I saw a big fish, maybe 2 or 3 meters, 6 to 10 feet long. Her arms were up in the air. Someone else was listening to a music player, did not hear the screams, but his wife yanked off his earphones and yelled, "Shark attack!"
Wow.
At him. Witness say...
That's got to be jarring coming out of your James Taylor collection.
A man ran down the jetty, yelled at a lifeguard to join him, swam up to the woman who was now floating face down in the water, circled by a growing cloud of blood.
Ah.
Lifeguard edged toward the woman, pulled her onto shore. She was... taken to shore, but the 70-year-old woman was killed by the shark.
I'll look at photos of that all day. You got photos? I'll look at them.
Authorities are keen to restore normality to the thriving and popular resort, which is one of the pillars of the tourist industry, vital to the Egyptian economy, accounting for about 12% of the country's jobs.
So let me understand this. Not to be all quaint about this, but she was at the beach.
Yep.
She went in the water.
Yep.
Sharks in the water.
Right.
She got attacked.
Right.
Sounds like normality is ongoing. It doesn't seem like it needs to be restored.
No, and somebody else was apparently attacked, mauled by a shark there just a few weeks
right.
ago.
Right. You're in the shark's house, as Pat Riley would say. You don't, it's not like the shark, I mean, it's not like you just opened like your wardrobe or something to get a pair of pants and the shark just lunged out or something. Or it was like in the toilet bowl.
You got in the tub and you're going to take a nice hot bath and go, shark!
And suddenly there's a tiger shark in there just giving you what for. I mean, you go into the ocean. No. That's where the sharks... I mean, seriously. It's not like... I mean, I'm sure she was a nice person, and I'm sure that her family is all... You know, they're despondent over her death, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... You just... It's like people just wouldn't wander into the Serengeti and go, did you know there are animals in the Serengeti Plains?
No.
The damnedest thing. And in the jungle, too. Apparently, things live there.
You know, if you watch the Discovery Channel, you know where not to go.
Or, you know, if you just think for maybe like a second or two, I mean, I don't want to, like, overtax everybody's, like, you know, mental processing power.
But again, there are a lot of beach resorts all over the world that people swim all the time and don't get attacked by sharks. I mean, you're not necessarily expecting it.
No.
You're at a really nice resort. You're spending an ass load of money. You're having a good time. You have a couple of Mai Tais. You go out for a swim. You're not expecting a shark to bite
you
in half. But
that's right there. See, that's where the answer is. The answer is in the observation. It's when you sit up and you say, you're at a really nice resort. So that is the idea that you're at a really nice resort, and you're a person of means, and so therefore you are even more convinced that nothing bad can happen to you because you paid a lot for this hotel. And it's nature just doesn't give an F, does not give a rip at all.
NASA is once again delaying the Space Shuttle Discovery's final mission to the International Space Station.
Sorry.
You okay over there?
Yeah, it's me.
The launch won't take place until at least February 3rd. NASA's Space Station Program Manager, Mike Suffredini, says they've decided more tests and evaluations are needed first.
Is this NASA or space?
NASA.
Let's see here a second. I gotta find the... You've got like nine different space cut and a NASA cut. Here we go. This is...
The loading panel itself and the manufacturing defects. The other test will look at the loading conditions actually on the tank out at the pads.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
The loading of the panel itself and the manufacturing defects. The test will look at the loading conditions actually on the tank out at the pads.
Do you have any idea? I mean, there's a little bit of a dropout, but I don't think that would help us.
No.
I have no concept of what the problem actually is.
He could literally just say, we got to fix some stuff.
Seriously, there's a, we got a who's it on the thing that's not really, the thingamajig isn't going another way.
The Framus gadget is loose.
Exactly.
That would be all we need to know.
The bifurcator is all invertebrated.
Suffredini says more tests are needed to figure out the cause of cracks found in the foam covering the vehicle's external tank.
See, there you go. It's full of cracks. The whole thing is filled with holes. It's like so much space-going cheesecloth. Oh, I'm sorry.
We laid in those tests just kind of conceptually. There's really no way we can get there before the December launch window.
He's just effing with us. He doesn't even know. He's probably a janitor. They just found him. They stuck him in front of the microphone.
Well, he's program manager. That could mean anything. He does the bookkeeping.
He's just some student taking rhetoric 101, and they're seeing if he can sort of pull it off in front of a live audience.
A man talking on his mobile phone finished his call and then ended up in the hospital. Aaron Embry was in Cedar Hill, Texas, and said he had just finished a call when he heard a loud pop. He felt something trickling down his face, and it was blood. His ear was bleeding profusely, and he was immediately taken to the emergency room at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas. He received 4 stitches, but said there was no hearing loss. The glass on the face of his Motorola Droid smartphone shattered while he was talking on it. He said he just bought it 2 days earlier. Once I got to the mirror and saw it, it was only then that I kind of looked at my phone and realized that the screen had appeared to burst outward, he said. The phone still appeared to be functioning with its battery intact. Motorola issued the following statement. Motorola's priority is and has always been the safety of our customers, and all Motorola products are designed, manufactured, and tested to meet or exceed international and local standards for consumer safety. We will reach out to the consumer and investigate this thoroughly.
You know, the thing is, my wife has a Motorola Droid, and it doesn't feel like glass. It just feels like, I mean, I guess maybe if it's a hard enough kind of plastic, then the difference is negligible, but it doesn't, whereas like the iPhone... And I don't even know if the iPhone is actual glass.
I believe it is.
It feels like glass.
Yeah.
The Droid, though, the Android, the Motorola Droid that you know that this guy's talking about, which I guess is the same one she has, doesn't feel like a glass at all. I mean, it does feel like a very, I don't know, it feels like a sort of rubberized kind of polymer coating or whatever. But I mean, I guess if it's sharp, it can cut you. You don't really care.
Well, in August, there was a man in India who was found dead. He'd gone to the forest to graze cattle. And they found him dead with burns to his left ear, neck, and shoulders near a farm, in India. And they believe that he had been talking on his Nokia cell phone when it exploded.
I guess you don't really consider the fact that, it is like a big glass and metal thing with a some sort of a power-generating device inside of it that could, just sort of go into, like, nuclear acceleration mode, apparently, at any moment.
Yeah, and in January, there was another woman, I believe, in India who was killed while talking to her husband while the phone was charging. And I remember when that story came out, because that was back in January, there were a lot of stories in the news and there was a lot of stuff going around about whether or not it was safe to talk on your phone while it was charging. And that really doesn't seem to be an issue for most people. I think that you have this many cell phones. Honestly, I just think you have this many cell phones. Every once in a while, something's going to go wrong with one of them.
I mean, it seems like if it was happening to even half of 1%, I mean, that would be just hundreds of people a year. So this is really, look, I know this is cold comfort to the guy. Is he dead?
No.
He's just mangled.
Well, this guy, the Indian guy is dead, but this guy just just got his face cut.
And so, you know, dead, maimed, injured, you know, what have you. That doesn't really come for you, but I mean, that's just hard cheese, as they say. That's just that's the universe reminding you of a little thing called randomness. So yeah. There's nothing that can be done about that.
So don't be afraid.
That's what I'm saying. Just plunge on ahead, safe in the knowledge that cancer and garbage disposals will get you in the end. Here's Don Taylor.
That's all the science.
All right. Let's see. There's your fantastic. Did you just say talking on the phone to her other husband?
No, I might have said that. What I meant was her husband. She was talking on the phone to her husband.
Just checking.
I might have said other husband. But...
more to the story. Somebody projecting something? Something you'd like to share with the group, Don?
No. Okay. Not at the moment.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right. Fantastic. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, December 6th, 2010. Taser Watch coming up next hour at the Rick Emerson radio program. Clown Watch as well. I'm going to have you write out the, like, phonetically, the day of the clown thing. It is, because you tell me, it's like, I keep wanting to say, like, Dia de la Picasa or something, and that's like that Google picture thing, so I got nothing. Clown Watch coming up next hour. We'll have the Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, will rejoin the program after an extended absence for paternity leave, and we'll do the top five songs written about a departed or departing band member. That is all coming up out next hour at rickemerson.com. Still to come this hour here at Legion of News, we got your entertainment news. That'll be headed your way in just a few. Don't forget, this program, if you find it enjoyable, if you find it delectable in an auditory way and soothing to the ears, you can thank the fine folks at Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com. Because here's the thing about the exploding cell phone. I'm not saying that they can fix that or really even, like... that's one of those things. If that's going to happen, nobody's going to be able to stop that. That is that's a train without brakes that can't be halted by anybody but the fickle finger of fate. So that really is beyond their ken, their purview. But it does underscore something, which is that electricity, not unlike when you're inflating a tire and you're always convinced it's going to blow up and just maim you and you're going to be like that one. And here's, let me just tell you this about that. So I was watching Oprah like 9 years ago. Probably longer ago than that. I mean, it was probably more than a decade ago. Some woman went on Oprah. No, she was inflating a tire, bam, and then just like face gone. I mean, it was like she was just sandblasted clean. Sands any sort of identifying features.
And aren't you actually afraid to inflate your tires now?
Well, I wasn't. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a fear that I had previous to that. But I'd like to thank Oprah for planting that germ in my the acorn, which then grew into a mighty oak of terror within my brain. But electricity is the same way. Like, you're clearly not this way because you're always, jamming your fingers into light sockets to get, to do whatever, or something. You're jamming something into something else.
Every once in a while.
Is it the microwave? No, it's a toaster.
Every once in a while, a bagel or something will get stuck in the toaster, and I'll take, like, a fork, and I'll stick it down the toaster to kind of unstick it.
Is this like a thing where
often.
Are you trying to readjust the curve or something? Because, like, this guy was just using the phone properly. And, you know, and he was the unlucky, like, the roulette wheel just came up on, like, 000 or something, and it, you know, blew off his ears. Whereas you're over there actually just jamming metallic objects into your toaster while it's plugged into the wall.
It's kind of like a real-life game of Operation, because the idea is you just don't want to touch the sides. You just want to, like, get the
I agree.
The bagel.
Oh, no, I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm with you on that. Well, whatever. Don, notwithstanding, here's the thing: is you don't want to monkey around with electricity, kids. So if you have to do some sort of upgrading, installing, you have to do a repair. Maybe you've got water or smoke damage. Maybe you just got to be remodeling, adding another room onto your house. You're going to be upgrading an existing room. Maybe you got one office building, going to become two, going to become four. Begat Methuselah. Whatever. You contact Squires Electric; they can come out and make sure that the entire place is in tip-top condition. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Which they don't give that to, like, just anybody. It's not like you can just send away for that, like, a Unitarian church license or something.
They wouldn't give one to me. I stick forks in the toaster.
I thought you meant the Unitarian church.
Oh, they wouldn't do
Aren't
that.
Aren't you, like, a licensed minister somewhere?
No.
You get a friend of yours that was, like, had some gag license to perform weddings, right?
No, that's not me.
Who married you? Isn't it, like, some...
No, he was an actual licensed officiant, but he was a humanist.
It wasn't, like, from a box... Well, that's not a real religion.
That was the point.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He was legally able to perform a ceremony, so, but he's not religious.
So it was sort of a wink and a nod kind of priest.
So it was
kind of
we had a wedding without any God talk.
I don't understand. Is he? So it was like at the courthouse or something?
No, it was at Edgefield.
So he was an officiant of the state, basically.
Right.
He was a proxy for
the
state.
He was a licensed officiant, but he's not a minister. He's actually a humanist. He's actually sort of...
What does that mean?
That means that he's like actually quite anti-religion. The humanists are very sort of anti-religion. They're all about the whole, you know, being reasonable and using your brain and science.
This seems a little bit like when Republicans want to just claim the word liberty. It seems like calling yourself a humanist is an overly broad way of describing one's worldview if it really just has to, you know, if he just wants to marry you and Patrick.
No, and, you know, and they get together and they have meetings at which they have big old discussions about whether or not why religion is bad and about, like, you know, the reasonable mind of man. If it was Dr. Dunn, that guy in the pale blue turtleneck that you see on the cable access.
I'm going to be a thingologist. That's what I'm going to call it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to. That's my new movement.
I also don't like the term mixologist.
Is that what they call a bartender?
Who make drinks.
Well, it's like sexologist. It just sounds fake, right?
Yeah.
Well, in any event, SquiresElectric.com, they can make sure that... let's just call it what it is. They're going to make sure you don't blow off your toes trying to fix something in the house. I mean, really, you can't. I mean, you could put a price on that, but it's a lot. That's the thing. It's going to have many, many zeros, and there's going to be a deductible. You don't know from deductible, friend. So you contact Squires Electric at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
Don Meredith, one of the most recognizable figures of the early Dallas Cowboys and an original member of ABC's Monday Night Football broadcast team, died Sunday.
Tell me that the story contains a turn out the lights joke.
I don't think it does.
I'll be prepared for that next hour.
It's too bad you don't draw, like, political cartoons. Because you know how there's always every time somebody dies, there's the obligatory cartoon of them standing at the pearly gates and
or on the horizon or
making
something.
A joke about his thing. There should be, that's not a joke if there's a mention of it. Meredith's signature call was singing the famous Willie Nelson song, Turn Out the Lights, when it appeared a game's outcome had been determined.
All right, so attention like Ted Rawl or somebody, just, you know, get on that.
Meredith's wife, Susan, told the Associated Press today her husband died in Santa Fe after suffering a brain hemorrhage and lapsing into a coma. She and her daughter were at his side when he died.
It is telling, by the way, how it's indicative of how huge a part of American culture he is that I know who he is.
Yeah.
You know, and then I remember watching Monday Night Football, and I don't, you know, I'm not a sports enthusiast, but that, I mean, that was... You do want to talk about a thing that is effectively a secular religion. I mean, that was a thing that, like, in our house and in houses all over the country, maybe in your house, I don't know, Monday Night Football was, I mean, that was, like, beyond an institution. I mean, it was a national obligation. You know, that's the thing. Like, last week you told me that I should watch my P's and Q's with the soccer people, because, you know, because there's like a huge rabbit. And I'm not knocking people who are into soccer. You know, the people, the relatively small group of people that are interested in soccer are really into it. That's fine. But, you know, it's like when they pulled those guys out of the mine in Chile?
Yeah.
They pulled the guys out, and the guy went into, like, the rugby chant or whatever, and, like, everybody there knew it. You can't do that with a soccer chant in America. That's just a fact. Monday Night Football is the closest we have ever come to that, and Monday Night Football during that era specifically.
Yeah.
That is the only thing we have ever had sports-wise to compare with that.
Meredith played for the Cowboys from 1960 to 1968, becoming a starting quarterback in 65. He never led the Cowboys to the Super Bowl, but he was still one of the franchise's first stars. He 2 years after retiring from football, Meredith joined Keith Jackson and Howard Cosell in the broadcast booth as part of the Monday Night Football crew. He quickly became one of the most popular broadcasters in sports because of his folksy sayings and country humor. He left ABC after the 73 season for a 3-year stint at NBC. He returned to Monday Night Football in 1977 before he retired in 84, 1 year after Cosell left.
And I think it was like, I might be wrong about this. I think like Frank Gifford or somebody was like in there at some point. He was sort of part of that mix.
They were trying to make Frank Gifford into like a Dandy Dunn Meredith kind of a guy,
but
Frank just was always such a stiff.
God damn. You know, can I just tell you how much, even as a kid, and maybe it makes more sense that it was a kid. I loved Howard Cosell when I was a kid.
Well, yeah.
Because he's such a goo. He was like a Muppet. I mean, he didn't even seem real. You know, and he had such a weird, elongated, you know, way of drawing out all his vowel sounds. And he had the whole, and an act of prestidigitation with, you know, and it was like, he was, you know, it's like if he, you hear that phrase, you're like, if he did not exist, God would have had to have invented him. If Howard Cosell was not a real person, like the Coen brothers would had to have written him. Because it's like, he's a rube, using big words. And it's like, but he was real. I mean, he was like a, and that was actually the way, and he just had such a great, you talk about a guy who, like Johnny Cash, was able to create his own legend while he was still alive. I mean, that was Howard Cosell. So, yeah, it was quite an era. All right. Well, there you go.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here is your entertainment news for Monday, December 6th, 2010. By the way, somebody wants clarification on... somebody wants clarification on why it is... This is by the filtering thing.
Okay.
On why a show, and presumably the host of a show, that is obsessed with corpse watches, snuff watches, grave watches, and necrophilia, doesn't want to see the whale photo. And here's the thing, because I don't care. Something happens to some human somewhere. What do I care? You know, people, you know, we got lots of people. And, you know, I get to, a whale has never fired me. Whale has never raised my rent. Whale has never pulled me over and jacked me up for no reason on the side of the road. I've never been mugged by a whale. Whale never done one thing to me. People, every problem I've ever had in my life caused by people. Every bit of guff, every bit of static, every bit of hassle caused by people. So you know what? Show me a picture of a guy going through a blending machine. I'm fine with that. Whales, they've left me alone. So that's what I'm saying.
And honestly, I didn't want to show it to you. Originally, I didn't want to show it to you just because it was gruesome. It was more a matter of you read these stories all the time that like an animal, a whale or something has been injured. And usually you don't see anything. And in this case, it's like the whale had surfaced. And yeah, there's a chunk out of this whale the size of a parking lot. And it was like, oh my God. I was actually kind of stunned by the damage this whale seems to have sustained and is still swimming around.
That is actually one of those. That is one of the, that is really one of the very few rules that we have, you know, and it, not even really rules. I think we've done over the years on the Emerson shows that we just we have kind of a moratorium is not the right word because that implies that it's temporary. But we just don't like truck with the whole like. You know, and then there was a cat, and then the guy got his lawnmower. And it's like, we just done, because we found that, that's the sort of thing. And it's not just me, it's like the audience, too. We've learned that the audience can tolerate, I mean, how often, we have like a nail gunner wood chipper story 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week. Like, we'll talk more about this next hour, but we were at the Christmas Mountain trees over the weekend. And there's that thing that bales up the tree, and immediately we're like, hey, has anybody ever been sucked into that? You know, it's like with barely concealed glee.
I'm standing around with one of the listeners, and he and I are talking about the different things we would like to throw into the baler.
Awesome.
I'm like, at the same time, we both go, a ham.
Right.
Like, hey.
See, that's the thing. So we've learned that not just with us, but with the audience, there's just like zero tolerance for stories or depictions of like animal injury or cruelty or whatever. So that's my thing. So I didn't mean to snap you about that.
Oh, no, really.
That's
all right.
If I sounded brusque, I apologize.
You did, but you know.
It's because I'm underneath my brutish exterior, Don, I have a heart of gold.
And honestly, I kind of like it a little bit when you get, you know.
You like it because I hit you because I love you.
Exactly.
And if I don't love you, nobody else will.
A one-day auction of Johnny Cash memorabilia turned out to be twice as lucrative as expected with help from a bidding war on the embroidered blue jumpsuit he wore during a rehearsal at San Quentin State Prison. Sunday's sale by Julian's Auctions in Beverly Hills was expected to bring in between $200,000 and $400,000. Darren Julian said the final total went over $700,000. Cash was wearing the blue jumpsuit at a rehearsal in 1969 when he was photographed giving the finger to a concert photographer.
I love that photo. That's awesome.
Julian says the suit was bought by a collector in Belgium after a bidding war raised the price to $50,000.
Belgium, eh?
A poster announcing Cash's performance at the prison sold for $25,000.
That's freaking awesome. Next week, you know, I forgot to do it today. Ryan White from the Oregonian is going to be on the Rick Emerson Show next hour. He's been, God, it's been like 2 months or something, 3 months. He's been gone. He's been being a parent and whatnot. Next week, I'll bring in my Kiss auction catalog from that auction they had a couple years ago.
I do want to see that. Rock star Steven Tyler recently reached out to a woman with Lou Gehrig's disease. He has a new gig as judge on Fox's American Idol and his 4.5-decade career fronting Aerosmith, but he made time for a special phone call Wednesday to Menorah Park campus resident Susan Marshall. During part of the call, Tyler told Marshall, I've called, and Susan, I love you, and happy bat mitzvah, and happy everything else. I mean, happiness is all we got. Tyler said.
Well, some of us.
Marshall is a former fashion model who now weighs 72 pounds and is confined to a wheelchair. She's paralyzed from the neck down. She uses a computer to speak with. Marshall has two final wishes: to have her bat mitzvah, a Jewish confirmation service, and to hear from Steven Tyler. Her rabbi said, we're talking about her bat mitzvah on Hanukkah, and this is a dream and a hope. And he called on the first day of Hanukkah.
That's so great. See, that's the thing that just, the small flickering flame in my heart that burns for humanity burns just a little bit brighter because of that story, because of Steven Tyler.
Susan's bat mitzvah will take place on Sunday. She's going to actively claim her Jewish identity and lead her congregation in prayer. In light of the bat mitzvah, Tyler said a prayer in Hebrew for her over the phone.
Come on. How much cooler could that guy possibly be? Answer, like, none.
Yes.
None more cool.
Oprah Winfrey has selected a pair of Dickens classics, A Tale of Two Cities and Great Expectations, for her book club. The two novels are being issued in a single-bound Penguin paperback edition, around 800 pages, with a list price of $20. The electronic version, also from Penguin, sells for $7.99. And here's a secret.
Not very good.
I think they're in the public domain, so I think you can download the ebooks for free.
Is that true?
I don't know. I think a lot of classics like Jane Austen novels and stuff like that, you can actually download for free because they're in the public domain.
I didn't know that. I figured there'd be like some granddaughter somewhere who was like, hey, that's my... Well, they're British, though. That makes a lot of the difference, actually. Because America's pretty... we like to hold on to things for a long time, like way after we're dead, like those people who wrote her Happy Birthday.
Like, we read Treasure Island for my book club, and there's like a gazillion different editions of it available because anybody can print it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, I guess, because I know it makes me a bad person, but here's the thing about Dickens novels. I don't mean to sound like a hick, you know. And I'm not some American that needs everything, you know, like reduced down to like a Twitter feed, you know, thing or whatever. But did you see there's that book now that's just like classics reduced to Twitter headlines?
No,
it's like great novels reduced to 140 characters.
I don't have any interest in reading that any more than I want to read the Jane Austen with zombies books.
It's like
I just don't care.
But like at least that, like there's like the entire story and then some. Like at least it's an actual book, I guess is my point. This is like, I don't know, anything over 140 characters is taxing my brain power. But the thing about Dickens is, this is just my assessment. And so like, you know, if you're, you know, teacher or just, you know, some bookie, you know, not an actual book, you know what I mean, you know, some book nerd, just, you know, whatever. It's a big world with lots of different opinions. Dickens' stories just tend to be sort of dull to me because he was paid by the word, which is the thing they don't really teach you in school.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that and he labored over his art and he stayed up until midnight, reaching inside his soul to bring out his innermost thoughts into... You know, and he was just trying to make money. That's the thing.
Yeah, he was cranking out as many pages as he could so he could keep coal in the fire.
Like when you read A Tale of Two Cities, which, you know, I'm not saying it's like a bad book, but it's like it takes like five pages to tell you what a tree looks like or something. And it's because they're like giving him like tuppence for every two or three words he can crank out. And so he just took forever to do everything.
Oh, and I threw this out before I even read further. So they even mentioned in this piece, Great Expectations can be downloaded for free on Kindle. Tale of Two Cities costs 99 cents on Barnes and Noble's ebook device, so you can get the. You don't have to spend $20 for the Oprah-sanctioned Penguin books.
They'll do that thing though, where they, you know, that she has like it's like an annotated thing probably, where there's like an Oprah introduction or an Oprah. You know what they ought to make? Here's the thing that I would read. I ought to just do this. I shouldn't even be giving this idea away for free on the air. It's the thing I should keep, and I should wring this for every shekel I possibly can. They ought to do like a director's commentary, but with books. You know?
Yeah.
Because you can get annotated editions of stuff, but it's always, but again, it's always like really dry, scholarly annotations of things that you probably aren't ever really going to read anyway. They ought to do annotations of popular literature, popular fiction, and so forth. That's the thing I would do, because then it's like you're getting two books in one. Not unlike when you get, you know, like you can get Citizen Kane where Ebert does the commentary. And that's great, because it's like a documentary and a movie all in one, which is, you know, that's a thing that as a content lover, I'm really into that. They ought to do that with books.
I have a copy of of Salem's Lot that was just issued a couple of years ago that actually has, it's like a director's cut of the book where it has a little bit of extra material. And it has this big old long, like, new introduction from Stephen King talking all about Salem's Lot.
So Salem's Lot, not The Stand?
No, Salem's Lot.
I didn't see, and I never knew that there was an unexpurgated version of that put out.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah, it is. You know, I actually started rereading again not too long ago because it's been so long since I read it. And I was just going, wow, I forgot how good this book was. And I also forgot how long the sort of prologue was, because it starts with a man is checking into cheap motels with the boy, and he can't go back to Maine, but he keeps track of it by reading the newspapers. And you're like, I don't remember any of this stuff. It's like, well, it's because it's been like 20 years since I read the damn book.
Salem's Lot is a good book. It is in many ways the last... No, I'm not saying it's better, but it's sort of the last pure Stephen King book because it's the last thing he wrote before he became a celebrity. Mm. Everything else, because he wrote Carrie, but he wrote Salem's Lot before Carrie was actually published, because Carrie took like 5 years from submission to publishing or whatever. And in that time, he wrote Salem's Lot, and then by the time he wrote The Shining, Carrie had already come out, and it sold for like $400,000 or something. So,
and the drinking had already begun in earnest.
Yes, seriously. Well, he could afford more then. It wasn't like drinking or rent at that point. You could do both.
Well, as far as these Dickens books are, Winfrey's announcing them on her show today, and she's also going to have her long-awaited reconciliation with Jonathan Franzen. Says, you know.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. And I know that you'll be fascinated by that. You want to know about this. Danny Bonaducci got married again. He's married his manager girlfriend, Amy Railsback.
That's not going to go badly.
And I didn't have a chance to look, but I was going to go search on the internet and see if she was actually related to Steve Railsback. Because come on, how could she not be with the last name Railsback?
Steve Railsback.
He was sort of the poor man's Tommy Lee Jones in the 80s. He was in The Stuntman with Peter O'Toole. He played Charlie Manson in a TV movie.
That's where I think I know him from.
Yeah. Danny Bonaducci married his manager girlfriend, Amy Railsback, in Hawaii. Bonaducci, who starred in the reality series Breaking Bonaducci, is 51, and Railsback is 28.
Well done, Danny Bonaducci. That's what I'm saying. You know what? Here's the thing, is that... You know, life, I mean, you know, there's some ups and downs, but, you know, eventually, you know, for all of us, life sucks and then you're dead. And, you know, and that's one of those things that, you know, it's when the T-shirt carries a little bit of Taoist truth in it. It becomes a, you know, it becomes a fundamentally unimpeachable statement. So while you're here, if life hands you the opportunity to shtup, you know, 21-year-olds, by God, have at it. You know, because someday you'll be incontinent and enfeebled. So live while you're alive, sir. Sleep while you're dead. You're listening to Legion of News, brought to you by Christmas Mountain Trees. We'll talk more about this next hour, but we had a fantabulous visit to Christmas Mountain Trees on Saturday morning, and we met a lot of great listeners there as well. Troy and Jennifer are the proprietors of Christmas Mountain Trees. It's been in the family since 68 years, 1942. It started with Troy's grandfather actually going up, cutting down trees in Mount Hood, bringing them back, selling them in the city. They then got and here's the weird thing about running that place as a family farm. Is that the first... This is the thing that was weirding me out. Is like when they decided to start a Christmas tree farm, that's a thing where from the day you buy the farm and you start it till like the day you can actually sell something is a decade. It's 10 years before the first crop comes in. So, I mean, that really is... I mean, that's some dedication right there. It's sort of... And it's weird, too, the idea that you can start a farm but you can't actually harvest or sell anything for 10 years.
Yeah.
But it really is just astounding. We had a... And I stuck around for a while after, because you left, and then, you know, Cheryl was there, and we had some other listeners sort of coming in throughout the day, and it was really just, it was a great experience. We'll talk more about it next hour, but go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com or go to their Facebook page, Facebook.com/ChristmasMountain. They're a family farm. They've been there since 1942, give or take, as a business, and it is an entire experience. You go up with your family, you get a wagon ride through really just like acres and acres. I mean, just an almost infinite-seeming number of trees. You find the right tree, you take it home, and it's a they'll bale it for you. They'll take off and how great is that needle shaking thing?
And it was really great too, because you like get off, you walk around, you say I want this tree, and you can either cut it down yourself or the guys cut it down for you, and then they just kind of put your tag on it and put it by the side of the road.
It meets you at the bottom.
Yeah, and then the tree pickup guy comes along behind, and then when you get back down where the fire is and everything, it's like, then your tree shows up. And they have the thing that shakes the needles off, and then it goes in the baler, and they string it up. It's awesome.
Now, were you there when Patrick put up your tree in the house?
Yes, I did.
Now, did you see that whole thing where, like, you just, like, take off that one piece of twine, and the thing just goes...
We couldn't figure out how to just take it off so it would go... We ended up unspooling it around.
Oh, man. Oh, yes. You know, it's for us, like, here at the office and at home, we just like cut the twine at the bottom, and then the tree just, it was like an umbrella. It just went and immediately was just like perfectly in place.
I will say though that Patrick overestimated the, because again, you're outside and there's trees. So a tree that seems sort of small-ish,
the outside ceiling is high.
At the tree farm,
yeah.
you get it into your house, and it's like, dear Lord, it takes up like a quarter of the living room. It's huge.
Ours, actually, I swear to God, it is like there's probably a 16th of an inch between the top of the tree and the ceiling of our home. I mean, maybe less. I mean, it's like if the tree, if we just so much as breathe, the tree will hit the, you know, it's fantastic. All right. Well, on that note, we should bring to a conclusion of this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. Following a brief musical interlude today, Aaron Duran with The Weekend Geek, Ryan White from The Oregonian, and the Top Five. We'll see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?